Conflicted. Better lick your finger and turn a page. Dissect the lines that paid you to rage. Get out of your Monday drudgery. Turn up the volume on front page fuckery. Yeah.
And I am back. Welcome to another episode of Front Page Fuckery. It's me, Kelechi, the baby girl, aka mother of London. Just back to talk up the things, you know, turning bad news into good conversation. And if you're a regular, welcome back. I mean, we've only had, what, is this my fourth episode? Anyway, welcome back, Sha. And if you're new here, well, hello. Nice to meet ya. Hoping to be one of your favorite things about Mondays going forward. That's if this actually does come out on a Monday, because Brent and I stay tussling. I try and get this to him in time and he does what he can amidst all the other things that he's doing. But let's get into the things, because there are quite a few things to get through. I made a video earlier on this week talking about the fact that alt-right people are training combat, like they're taking it seriously. They've got extensive groups, like different types of groups, where they are training combat. Meanwhile, we are here going to day raves and having a great time. Do not get me wrong, I think day raves are wonderful. Have a great time, whether it's a DLT brunch, whether it's a recess thingamajig. Like, all of you do what you're doing. However, can we also do that alongside training? Is all I'm essentially saying. And all of the man them that all you do is go to the gym, train your muscles, and then you carry a Gucci wash bag or a Louis V wash bag, and you've got your ankles showing when you're wearing your cute little trousers. That's all great, but can you fight? Can you fight is what we're now asking. Because muscle, are we going to eat the muscle? Are we going to drink the muscle? Will the muscle save us? Uncle, explain, and explain quickly. So it feels like a PSA right off the top, but we need to address it. Let's start getting into combat gyms. And I'm saying that and I almost worry, because it's just like, due to patriarchy, we're asking you to go and learn these skills, how to choke somebody out, how to do all of these things so you can be of use. Not so now that you can go and do basketball with women. Because some of you verbally already do that online. Your whole existence, your entire destiny when you entered into this realm was to go and argue with women in the comment sections of different videos and photos. Let's grow beyond that and also learn combat. Now, my women, my femmes, non-binaries, I'm asking you the same thing. And I feel like I'm seeing a lot more women actually taking up combat training. Do not go there and go and do romance. Go there and go and learn skills, please. Don't worry about, oh, do I look okay in this? We don't have time. We don't have time. Do I look okay? You'll look better than if you're dead. So let's get to it. So that's just my general call. And at the same time, I say that, and I was saying this in a members area, if you're not part of my members area, think about joining. It's called Kaleidoscope and it's on my website and it's £8 a month. And that's where I have like my daily-ish vlog and I talk about all of the other things I don't necessarily want to be saying on public forums. Why am I talking like somebody's chasing me? Give me a second. So I was saying on there that whilst I'm recommending these things, I also understand that a lot of these places can be toxic, especially whether it's MMA, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, just general fitness spaces, I find can perpetuate misogynoir and anti-blackness generally, and sexism. It's a lot. Ableism, all of the things. So please go there and really shine your eye, like choose carefully. And I say that, but you can try as you might to choose carefully and you're still going to meet mad people. I've experienced it a number of times. You try and choose carefully. You start training with somebody and you're in an environment and you realize that you're actually dealing with a white supremacist. So just be aware. And if it's not that, you're dealing with a misogynist. So you really do have to be rather vigilant, but I am encouraging us to, it doesn't even have to just be combat. Like, some people are taking up archery, some people are taking up axe throwing, some people are taking up horse riding. you know, just things. But I and people are like, oh, I go for walks in the woods. I think that's wonderful, baby. I think that's gorgeous. I think that's gorgeous, my little forest fairy. But I'm going to need you to be able to take a tree branch and whack. Do you understand? Whack. Okay? And people might be like, oh, Kelechi, this is so irresponsible to say on a public podcast. And I would need you to expeditiously suck out your mother, because I'm telling people what they actually need to know and what they need to know, because we're spending time doing, you know, let's all hold hands and sing Ringa Ringa. No, actually, Ringa Ringa Roses is about the plague and people were dying. A tissue. We all fall down. That was about the plague and people were dying. So I think maybe that's even apt. Something that we're singing as a nursery rhyme was actually about people dying from the plague. Right. And this is the way that we lull ourselves into a false sense of security, not thinking about the immediate action we need to take about certain things. And also finances can be a thing. Also capoeira. Right. The reason I say capoeira is because in my time dabbling with Brazilian jiu-jitsu and then actually visiting Brazil, it's interesting to see just how anti-black the country is, and how Brazilian jiu-jitsu as a martial arts form was also anti-black, like banning people from using capoeira back in the day, or capoeira as a dance form, as a martial arts. It was banned because that is how those enslaved Africans were able to teach each other combat under the guise of dancing. So capoeira is one that you might want to consider. But now some of the best Brazilian jiu-jitsu practitioners have capoeira mixed into what they're doing. There are so many things that were banned for black people to do, enslaved African people to do, that would be part of the tools of their liberation. And there are spaces for us everywhere, and I think that we need to reclaim them, really. So I just felt like I'd say that, not to alarm anybody, not to induce anxiety, but to just say that we need to be thinking purposefully about how we're using our bodies going forward. That's all. So wanted to share that. On a random tangent, I'm so annoyed because last week I started recording, didn't look at myself in the mirror. I was so preoccupied with not having a blurry video, and the video wasn't blurry. So that made it all the more clear that I had a piece of fluff on my face for most of the time when I was doing the podcast last week. And this is what I mean. Like, people see me and they're like, oh my God, Kelechi, you just seem so together. Thank you for all that you do. I exist in a perpetual state of chaos. Like, if you knew the things I discuss with my friends and the things that go on in my head, you'd be like, whoa, it's just, it is really a mess. And we just thank the Most High that I continue to trudge along as I do. And all the time I'm kind of in this state of, you know, who am I? What is this? Where is it going? And what happens when I'm no longer here? Because not to toot my own clit, but I feel like I'm one of the baddest to be bad. I feel like I'm one of the realest bad girls going. Not from a conceited place, but I've also got a reason. I'm conceited. I got a reason. Oh, Remy, fix up, please. But no, I know how much passion I put into the world and into what I do. That's where I'm speaking from, like knowing how much of myself I give to the world and give to those around me, right? And so you're just telling me that at one point in time, I'm just not going to exist. Me. Where do broken baddies go? Do they find their way home? That's what I want to know. Where do the baddies go? Not broken, because you won't even be broken baddie, you know, like you'll be an intact baddie spiritually. Where do spiritual baddies go? And do they find their way home? Existential questions. Constantly, I'm thinking about that. And thinking about a spiritual baddie that is no longer with us, I want to say an RIP, rest in power, to the great Asata Shakur. Activist, baby girl, one of the four you know, the foremothers, the elders, to lead the way in being disruptive on a societal level, so much so that the USA is still pissed that they never got their hands on her because she went to Cuba. She got away and got to Cuba, and Cuba kept her safe all of these years. So for all of the things going on, big up Cuba for keeping a bad girl like Assata Shakur alive. And I also need you to know in this moment that when Obama, your forever president, your Barack Obama, when he was president, he actually doubled the bounty on Assata Shakur's head. He wanted her got. So this comes back to what I was saying about not all skin folk are kinfolk. And I'm having to realize that on a really, really major level. I'm going to read about Assata Shakur shortly. But what I wanted to say was I was doing an event recently and it flummoxed me and it flabbergasted me and it confounded me that there was an elder black person who was speaking about the future, our future. And the way that they were speaking about it just sounded so colonial that, oh, by such and such time, Africa will have the most in terms of population and, you know, they'll be consuming and they'll be doing this and they'll be doing that. And I just thought, oh, and that's where people will be getting their workforce from. So forever we're working for people, forever we're merely consumers. That is the highest hope we have for Africans. Oh, baby. We are cooked. Put the thermometer in us because we are cooked. Okay? Anyway, let's get to Assata. Assata Shakur, black liberation activist, exiled in Cuba, dies at 78. That is so interesting, that age 78. I'll say more one day soon. Assata Shakur, an activist with the Black Liberation Army, exiled in Cuba for 4 decades, has died in Havana, age 78. Shakur, also known as Joanne Chesimard, died on Thursday of unspecified health conditions and advanced age. Cuba's Foreign Affairs Ministry said in a statement on Friday. She had been on the FBI's most wanted terrorist list for years after she escaped in 1979 from a New Jersey women's prison where she was serving a life sentence following her murder conviction in a shootout that killed a New Jersey state trooper and a fellow activist. Shakur maintained her innocence and in 1984 reappeared in Cuba where she was granted asylum by former president Fidel Castro. Boop, boop, boop. Shakur was born Joanne Deborah Byron in July 1947 in New York City and was raised between the city and Wilmington, North Carolina. She was the step aunt and godmother of the late rapper Tupac Shakur. She became involved in political activism for Black Americans while in college, first with the Black Panther Party, a group that favored radical resistance to racism in the United States and developed schools and other social services for Black people. The movement was heavily surveilled by the FBI, which considered it a threat to the US. Imagine black communities coming together or party or a movement, a liberation movement, creating communities for black people to override the crack cocaine that was being and heroin that was being flooded into these communities. They're trying to overcome that and that is seen as dangerous. Things that are uplifting black people seemed dangerous to the government. But I'll continue. Shakur was traveling with fellow activists in 1973 when their car was stopped by New Jersey officers. A shootout ensued in which state trooper Werner Forrester and fellow activist Zaid Malik Shakur were killed. Assata Shakur was also injured in the shootout. She was arrested and tried for Forrester's death but denied shooting him and said her trial in front of an all-white jury was unfair. Of course it was. She told NBC News in 1998 during an interview filmed in Havana that she escaped because she was afraid for her life and she would never receive justice in the US. Absolutely correct. Her exile in Cuba was among the many thorny issues between the communist-run island and the US. Shakur was the first woman to be added to the FBI's most wanted terrorist list. The agency and New Jersey each offered a $1 million, that's £746,000 equivalent, reward for information leading to her arrest. She was celebrated in music, with her name featuring in songs such as 1998's Rebel Without a Pause by hip-hop group Public Enemy and a song for Asata by the rapper Common. Shakur is survived by her daughter, Kakuya Shakur, who wrote on Facebook, "Words cannot describe the depth of loss that I'm feeling at this time." What a real one. What a real one. Rest in power. Rest in power, Asata. And thank you for being, continue being the bad girl that you are. So yeah, I wanted to share that. And it's interesting because I think one of the your front emails that you sent me actually talks about activist groups and all of that. And we'll get into it. So I wanted to share that because I felt that that was interesting. So as one person is leaving, somebody is returning back to their show. They don't compare in any way to Asata, but follow me here. So Jimmy Kimmel, I wrote these notes to myself. Jimmy Kimmel got his show back because he was suspended. He was taken off air because Trump got upset about something or other. And this is what he said. Before I even say what I want to say, I just want to play you what Jimmy Kimmel said. Can I get this over my head? Hold on. This is so awkward. I need a longer, longer headphones. But let's get into it. So this is what he said.
I don't think what I have to say is going to make much of a difference. If you like me, you like me. If you don't, you don't. I have no illusions about changing anyone's mind. But I do want to make something clear because it's important to me as a human. And that is, you understand that it was never my intention to make light of the murder of a young man.
Stop right there, because, wow, he timed that throat quiver impeccably. Now, let me not say anything, but when you've got good throat game like that, it comes in so handy in different areas of life. You didn't mean to make fun of a young man's death. I did. Let's continue.
I don't think there's anything funny about it. I posted a message on Instagram on the day he was killed, sending love to his family and asking for compassion. And I meant it. And I still do. Nor was it my intention to blame any specific group for the actions of what it was obviously a deeply disturbed individual. That was really the opposite of the point I was trying to make. But I understand.
Why do they always go with it was a deeply disturbed individual? I'm not saying that it wasn't a deeply disturbed individual, but why always, when it's white men shooting people, it's a deeply disturbed individual. It's like, oh, they were a nice person, really, and they like to play chess on a Tuesday and they love Doritos. They get humanized. It was a deeply disturbed individual. But when black people are killed by the police, they, like, as in they are the victims, they're killed by the police, then it's like, well, you know, we don't know the whole story and they were no angel. And that's somebody who's killed by police. And then the people who are killing other people, it's, oh, they were deeply disturbed. Interessante.
I understand that to some that felt either ill-timed or unclear or maybe both. And for those who think I did point a finger, I get why you're upset. If the situation was reversed, there's a good chance I'd have felt the same way. I have many friends and family members on the other side who I love and remain close to, even though we don't agree on.
Yeah. Actually, carry on a little bit.
We don't agree on politics at all. I don't think the murderer.
you have family members who you are close to, but you don't agree on things and, you know, like politics. So this is, again, another issue that I have with certain types of white people, because your privilege allows you to see so many things as just mere opinion. Oh, they just, you know, politically have a different point of view. Their political point of view, their political mere difference of opinion is the reason that other people are being killed. It's the reason that people are being held in concentration camps, for want of a better term. And they're saying that they're prisons and they're, what is it, alligator, Alcatraz, whatever. They've been held in mad places because of this mere difference in opinion. People are going without food, water, shelter because of this mere difference of opinion. People who do not ascribe or subscribe to heterosexuality are being killed for being who they are as a, you know, result of this mere difference in opinion. Do you see where I'm going here? So to get on to your, get back onto your TV show and say, oh, well, you know, I have people who I love who are on the other side. So all of you keep talking about, oh, we'll hold hands from across the island. This is why people keep saying that when it comes to, let me actually sit up, when it comes to the right wing and the left wing, what are we actually even talking about? Because it's still the same part of a white supremacist bird. I wonder if some people got what they wanted as a result of being on the ideological left, or these liberals got what they wanted, they would be very happy to thrive in racism, because the things that they want changed are very specific. It's not about liberation for all. It is a specific kind of comfort that they are wanting, so they can go back to having their blindfolds on and saying that they didn't see anything that's going on and just ignoring the screams. And that really, really bothers me. But let's hear more of his drivel. Hold on.
Who shot Charlie Kirk represents anyone. This was a sick person who believed violence was a solution, and it isn't.
So you don't believe that violence is a solution ever. He was sick. He was this individual that just had all of these problems, and violence is not the answer. But everything that America has managed to attain and maintain has been a result of violence. So you keep saying violence isn't the answer, but it's the only answer that you have for absolutely everything, until somebody else also copies that answer and goes, okay, I'm going to answer this question with violence too. And it's like, oh no, no, you can't do this. This is not who we are. I don't recognize my America. And that's what I've got to say. I mean, I know some of you are friends with her, but Angelina Jolie made a comment recently where she was just like, oh, I don't recognize my country. I don't recognize America. What the fuck were you recognizing before? All of you people that say, I don't recognize the country, what the fuck were you recognizing before? Because other people have been knowing this. Other people have been subjected to this. This has always been what America is. So what the fuck were you looking at? Anyway. And I just played that to say, you know, Jimmy Kimmel, shut your mouth, because all the, it's like, I think what gets me is just this massive performance that's going on everywhere, right? And white people and the People's Oracle said this way more eloquently, but I'm going to riff off of one part of the many things she said, but one part that really stood out to me, that white people will cross the road when they see black people, will cross the road when they see black men, specifically black, white women will clutch their bag, whatever, whatever. But the actual people that white people are scared of is other white people. And that's why there are so many people who are trying to fall in line now. We know why non-white people are trying to fall in line, because they want to stay in proximal to the power. But that's also the same for white people. White people actually don't want to offend other white people. That's why they're not going into their areas en masse to say, hey, what's happening here is wrong. That's why 53% of white American women voted for Donald Trump. Because they are scared of each other. And rarely do we see actual communities. Rarely is it community. It's more of an alliance. It's only getting along in order to keep other people oppressed. And white people fear other white people, but they displace that fear and claim that it's other people that they're fearing, other groups of people, but really it's each other. And then everybody else has to pay the price for it. Because if it wasn't a fear of whiteness, why did Jimmy feel the need to come and do that? Because at the end of the day, you've got the leverage, right? Because Disney is losing all of this money as a result of getting rid of you. You can play on that. I'm going to go there. Even Gary Lineker, like, bring it back to the UK. Gary Lineker was happy to be there at the BBC, seeing the fuck shit that BBC was doing for time. And even when he started getting more woke, quote unquote, and realizing the things, like, it still wasn't hitting. Because people don't want to lose their comforts. They don't really want to step out of line like that if it's going to upset other white people. And there's something to be said about that. And I've only said a little bit. So if you're not following her, check out the People's Oracle on Instagram. I said I'd stop making suggestions, but I just needed to let you know that. And I mean, just looking at my notes, the reason I'm saying that is when people go, oh, my grandparent was born of a different time, this, that, and the other. White people must find a way to signal in one way, shape, or form that they are still loyal to whiteness. Jennifer Lawrence was doing it recently when she was giving her speech about, oh, what's happening is a genocide, but then you're switching out words very carefully. And just last year, you were saying that you rate Amy Schumer and her idiotic self for whatever the hell she had going on, and her anti-Palestinian rhetoric, her Zionist rhetoric. I'm not saying that people can't change their minds. I'm not saying that people can't become more aware, but I'm also noticing how people are choosing language, and I just think it's a bit yucky, is what I'm saying. So shed that. Whilst Jimmy Kimmel got his job back, guess who didn't? A black woman. So there's a lady called Karen Attia. She's a journalist, and we follow each other. And funnily enough, she's been doing Muay Thai for a while, which I love. I noticed it on her page the other day. So she's a columnist. It says here, Washington Post columnist Karen Attia says she has been fired from the newspaper Washington Post over social media posts about gun control and race in the aftermath of far-right commentator Charlie Kirk's killing. Attia, 39, recounted in a Substack post that she had been dropped as a Post columnist after 11 years for speaking out against political violence, racial double standards, and America's apathy towards guns. The post, she wrote, accused my measured blue sky posts of being unacceptable, gross misconduct, and of endangering the physical safety of colleagues, charges without evidence, which I reject completely as false. Attia continued, they rushed to fire me without even a conversation. This was not only a hasty overreach, but a violation of the very standards of journalistic fairness and rigor the Post claims to uphold. The columnist's job was understood to be in jeopardy after she clashed with the Post opinion editor, Adam O'Neill, Pussy Clark, formerly of The Economist and The Wall Street Journal, who has reportedly offered buyouts to writers whose work does not fit with the editorial mix of the newspaper owned by billionaire Jeff Bezos. Founded Amazon, contributed $1 million to the fund for the inauguration of the second presidency of Donald Trump, for whom Kirk was a close ally, and the Post decided to forego endorsing a candidate in the November election won by Trump, a Republican, after the newspaper's editorial board had voted to endorse Democratic nominee Kamala Harris. So when everybody said, let's vote for Kamala, or let's endorse Kamala, they just said, well, no, then we're just not going to endorse anybody. Fuck you, liberal Democrat hoes, is really what they were saying there. In her Substack post, Attia noted that she was the last remaining black full-time opinion columnist on the paper, and blasted that Washington, D.C., one of the nation's most diverse regions, no longer has a paper that reflects the people it serves. Attia said her firing was part of a broader purge of black voices from academia, business, government, and media, a historical pattern as dangerous as it is shameful and tragic. The Washington Post is under an editorial mandate for the newspaper's opinion section to focus specifically on supporting and defending personal liberties and free markets. A Washington Post spokesperson declined to comment on personnel matters and pointed to the organization's policies and standards, including a section governing social media use. In writings on Blue Sky, Atiyeh lamented that the US, in her opinion, accepts and worships gun violence. And this is what I mean. What did she say wrong there? What was wrong with that? Because it's absolutely true. You've enshrined it into your constitution. So where did she lie? My only direct reference to Kirk was one post, his own words on record. She literally just wrote what he had said. She said in her Substack letter, the letter included a screenshot of a Blue Sky post alluding to a 2023 remark from Kirk about how several prominent black women do not have the brain processing power to otherwise be taken really seriously. You have to go steal a white person's slot to be taken somewhat seriously. Atiyeh continued that she was pointing to the familiar pattern of America shrugging off gun deaths and giving compassion for white men who commit and espouse political violence. The firing described by Atiyeh came after the Status Media newsletter, citing sources reported in August that she had refused a buyout offer. It also comes days after MSNBC political analyst Matthew Dowd was dismissed for describing Kirk in the aftermath of his killing as a divisive figure who pushed hate speech. Some accused Dowd of implicitly justifying the violence against Kirk by having said that hateful words lead to hateful actions. Dowd has since written his comments were misconstrued and MSNBC caved to pressure from a right-wing media mob. Dowd was one of the earliest instances of people across the US either being fired or disciplined at their jobs amid a coordinated effort to clamp down on commentary that is critical about Kirk. In August, the Post published an opinion piece by Trump administration official Jay Bhattacharya to argue that the Federal Health and Human Services Department's decision to cut support to mRNA vaccine development was a necessary step. Experts have warned that the approach is wrong-headed, with mRNA vaccines having saved millions of lives during the COVID-19 pandemic. The editorial page also published an opinion from Janine Pirro, a former host at the conservative Fox News network, who is now serving as a Washington, D.C. district attorney, that promoted the administration's decision to deploy National Guard troops on the streets of the capital to allegedly make them safer, even though the city's violent crime rate is at a 30-year low. I'm sorry, Karen Atiyeh, that that's happened. At the same time, it goes to show us that the media that we're consuming, there's always been an agenda, but more than ever, we can see the agenda so clearly. When the billionaires own the newspapers, they're not going to tell you anything that is going to stop their bag. They're not going to tell you anything that's going to stop their monies. And that's why I'm here. That's why I had to come back. On a public forum, it's funny, I was speaking to this astrologer a while back and he was looking at my chart and I said, oh, I've just gone private. I've got a private podcast on my website. I'm doing that now. And he's like, I think there are going to be world events that's going to drag you back outside. I was like, no, doubt it. Never coming back, actually. Oh, how wrong I was. Because, in fact, here I am. Here I am, Lord. It is I, Lord, I have seen the fakri from the right. Anyway, that's that. So those were my news bits, like those, that's my news. And also, I mean, I saw something about this phenomenon known as folie à deux, like two people madness. Basically, you basically absorb somebody else's delusions or psychosis. And this woman was talking about how it happened to her mum. And her mum went up in the mountains to go and live with this man who was a little bit younger than she was, but they were both old. And all for the sake of doing love, wanting to, this woman like was getting hurt. like being out there in the mountains. She wasn't feeling good. She got seen by a psychologist and they were like, yeah, she's just absorbed his delusions and that's where she's at now. And she said to her mum, like, maybe you should stay down here and not go back into the mountains. And the mum was like, no, I'm going. And they even got outside of their house or their little cabin or whatever. They got this sign that literally says, folie à deux. Don't ask me about French, man. I don't know. Anyway, they put the sign there and she just wished that her mum didn't have to go out sad like that. But I was thinking about that concept of absorbing somebody else's delusions and then thinking about newspapers and how we interact with them and how we interact with this white supremacist, heteropatriarchal system that we exist within and are trying to navigate. And are we not absorbing the delusions? And those of us who are willing to say, hey, I can't go along with this anymore. This is wild. This is really wild. This makes no sense. And then you've got other people who are deeply absorbed into the delusions and into the wildness that's happening. And they go, stop saying that. Stop doing that. And I was going to say earlier, like the listening and comprehension, as well as the reading and comprehension skills of the average person, sometimes that's interacting with me on social media, is woeful. I'll make a very clear point. And they'll come and argue another point that wasn't what I was saying in the first place. Like, you just want to be in your feelings for no reason. I made a video talking about the fact that Tesco, around my bits, they've put the, they're talking about, oh, you've got to pay for a plastic bag to put your shopping in because we need to save the environment. But you're using up bare plastic boxes to put pieces, put lamb in. When people can't buy lamb, you've put them in plastic boxes. You've locked away the detergent. You've locked away the baby formula. You've locked away the sanitary items. What is going on? Is that not indicative of the fact that people do not have money to buy their basic essentials? That what is now deemed as luxury are the things, the very basic things we need to live? You don't think that that's a problem? Oh, Kelechi, stop saying that, because it's the nitties, it's the junkies, it's the crackheads that are coming into the supermarkets and they're stealing these things and they're going to go and sell it to people so they can buy their drugs. Okay, run it back. Run it back, player. They are stealing the things because they have a substance dependency, because I'm not going to call them the things that you're calling them. They've got a substance dependency. They're stealing these things. Who are they selling it to, pray tell? They're clearly selling it to people that don't want to buy full price because they either can't afford it or they know that the markup is mad. So there is clearly an ecosystem where they are thriving because there is a demand for it. The demand would be cut. There would be no demand for their supply if our cost of living wasn't killing us. If people had standard universal basic income across the board and they were given an amount that allows them to maintain their dignity. Like, this wouldn't be happening. If we had, like, public health public health frameworks in place that were actually fit for purpose, you wouldn't have so many people outside wanting to fund their substance misuse issues, because they would be getting help from the community. People would have shelter. Not everybody has shelter, but these private companies and these contractors are building all of these homes, but they don't want us to actually live in them. Do you see how you're vilifying a symptom, the people who are perpetuating a symptom, but not thinking about the people and the structure that cause the actual illness? And this makes me sick. Like, that we are lacking such empathy. And I know those people, there are a majority of people who've come to follow me on the basis of, oh, I like that video that you posted that one time. So what if you like that video, how are you not getting what's in this video? How are you not understanding? Because the basis of most of my videos is that none of us are free if any of us are unfree. What are you not understanding there? Oh my God. And then one DJ, what is it? DL Monsu, Bonsu, DJ, whatever, comes to comment on that video and he says, are you actually stupid? Are you actually stupid? These people, these druggies are stealing it for X, Y reason. You're acting like you were born yesterday. Brother, who are you talking to? Am I stupid? Do I look like your partner? Do I look like your mother that should have taken it in the ass instead of whatever created you? Instead of your mother to have stretched her anus, you're out here unfortunately yapping about, am I stupid? No, you're the stupid one. I actually understand what's happening. Is your father a bastard? I actually understand how the systems are affecting us collectively, which is why I'm commenting on it. I refuse to vilify people who are experiencing substance addictions. I'm refusing to vilify people who are experiencing homelessness. Because whilst I might have, oh, this hang up and this bias, I understand that essentially this system is fucking us all. And it takes a radical shift of mindset. If we do not shift our mindset, we're not going to get very far. The issue is not a lateral one. It's not a horizontal one. It's a vertical one. The billionaires, the millionaires, they know class solidarity. It's us that's out here in the streets, in the trenches, that we're like, oh no, you're the problem. Oh no, it's the immigrants. Oh no, it's this. Meanwhile, there's a paedophile in the palace. Just thought I'd throw that one in there. It really, I don't know, it gets to me, you know, because where are we going with all of this? And at the end of the day, these pussyclots, right, you lot are coming to tussle with me like it's your father's business, like your last name is Tesco, right? As if I'm squeezing your Tesco testicles, you're coming to come and argue with me. Meanwhile, at the end of the day, when they don't sell these things, when they've gone by the sell-by date, they're going to go and throw it in a big bin outside. And in order to stop people from taking what they're no longer actually going to be able to use, they pour different liquids and things on them to make them not useful. So that's no, because they're not going to get a profit from that. It's already gone off. Why don't you want people to have it, if not for the fact that you're evil? Same with the benches that they've put spikes on, the pavement paths that they've put spikes on, so people who are experiencing homelessness can't sleep there. Is this the society that you lot want to live in? You think that's okay? You think that's fair? I'm disgusted and disgruntled by the state of our society and our lack of empathy. To be quite honest. And let me tell you something. Let me become Mother of London, aka Mayor of London in 2028. I'm going to rip the things up. I'm going to rip them up. And not because I want to make space for people to actually continue sleeping on the streets. It's that while we're figuring out this housing crisis, this engineered crisis, why am I going to make life even more terrible for people? They're putting spikes on road. They are putting spikes on benches so people can't sleep there. So they've got to get money to be able to be somewhere. And so if people are saying, oh, you know what I really want is lamb. What I really need is baby formula. What I really need is this, but I need it much cheaper. They're going to go and get it for people. Oh, but they're attacking the workers, and I need you workers to step the fuck back. Turn your face. With that being said, let's get into the front pages, because I really yapped. It might as well be SYM without the title. So I'm missing the iPaper, but I know I bought it. So I don't know where I put it on my journey. But this week we've got the Daily Mail for only 56 Ross Clark P. And we've got the Times newspaper. And we've got the Guardian newspaper. The front pages look rather bare. They're talking about the Ryder Cup. Ryder. Let's see. Let's start with the Daily Fail. It says here, worried about immigration? Starmer says you're racist. And it's these very inflammatory headlines for people who the average reading age is 9 years old, right? You are inciting hatred, you're inciting anger and thus violence by writing things in this way, because it is actually anchored in racism, this fear of immigration. And I've explained it last week, I'm not going to explain it again because I hate repeating myself. Keir Starmer was last night accused of insulting millions of voters worried about Britain's borders as he rebranded Reform's immigration plans as racist. Well, they are. That's all Reform is doing. Everything is based on racism and xenophobia. Amid growing Labour panic at the Reform surge in the polls, the Prime Minister ramped up his rhetoric against Nigel Farage's plan to tear up residency rules, saying it needs to be called out for what it is. Mr. Farage said the claim was an insult to millions who want the government to finally get a grip on immigration, telling the Daily Mail, "The Prime Minister has insulted those who believe mass migration should come to an end. Starmer thinks anybody here on a time-limited visa is entitled to stay in Britain forever. Labour do not believe in border controls and think anyone who does is racist." Highlighting a series of polls suggesting his party is on course to win the next election, Mr. Farage said, Richard Gere stays fine. Good on him. Anyway, sorry, back to what we're looking at here. What do you say? Keir Starmer has spent his entire weekend attacking Reform. This is the reason why. Ministers were taken aback by the PM's dramatic decision to play the race card. While senior figures backed him in public, some were privately concerned the move could backfire. One Labour source said, "I know he's talking about Farage and this horrible divisive policy, but there is a danger that people with legitimate concerns hear it and just think he's calling them racist. I'm not sure that it's really the best way to win people back from Reform." And despite the PM's angry attack, Home Secretary Shabana Mahmood will today trumpet plans to crack down on the system for granting migrants indefinite leave to remain. It came as Sir Keir Starmer admitted the left had got it wrong on immigration for years. Andy Burnham renewed his attack on the PM's leadership, accusing him of presiding over a climate of fear in a party that was stifling open debate. The PM refused to rule out raising VAT in the budget. Exclusive polling for the Daily Mail revealed voters see Labour as the least patriotic party, despite Sir Keir's pledge to lead a patriotic renewal of Britain. Rachel Reeves is preparing to warn youngsters they will have to take a state-sponsored job after 18 months on the dole or lose benefits. It sounds like we've gone back in time. It sounds like we've gone back in time. I don't even know what to tell you. Reform's quote unquote racist migrant plans could tear Britain apart, says PM. Labour starts conference with attacks on Farage and calls for party unity. Keir Starmer attacked Reform UK's racist plans to revoke the rights of thousands of people to live in Britain as a series of cabinet ministers escalated attacks on Nigel Farage on the first day of the Labour conference yesterday. The Prime Minister said plans by the Reform leader to revoke indefinite leave to remain from families who may have spent years working in Britain could tear this country apart. Though he said he understood many tempted to vote for Reform were frustrated at the pace of change. The Guardian understands Labour HQ is to ramp up its efforts to contact voters who may be considering voting Reform. MPs and activists will be told to get on an election footing to seek out data on non-voters in their patches to avoid the mistakes progressives made that led to Brexit and the election of Donald Trump. The Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, and the Home Secretary, Shabana Mahmood, are expected to launch their own attacks on Farage and Reform today in a show of unity from the party, which has been under significant pressure since the summer. Reeves will issue a veiled warning to businesses of the instability they would face and potential breakdown of trade deals. Mahmood, who will announce tough new conditions for granting leave to remain, will stress to the conference that Labour must be tough on migration or voters will fall for Farage's false promises. Across the conference, ministers urged party unity and for members to turn their fire on Farage rather than Starmer's leadership, with several explicitly criticising the leadership ambitions of the Mayor of Greater Manchester, Andy Burnham. The Scottish Deputy Leader, Jackie Bailey, said Burnham should stop this nonsense, and the Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, said the party should get behind the team captain. But Oh, sorry, wait. Speaking at the conference, Burnham said he had done nothing more than launch a debate and that he was worried about the party's perilous position before local elections next year. He called for Labour to end a climate of fear in the party and said there should not be demands of simplistic statements of loyalty for people who disagreed on policy. I agree. Like, maybe, you know, look what a Burnham can do. Maybe we need to see what Andy Burnham can do, although I didn't think he handled the situation with Zeina Iman very well when she was allegedly drugged and raped by Greater Manchester Police. So there's that. What else did I see there before I just dashed it to the side? Like I said, somebody won at golf. Shane Lowry, I guess. Irishman Shane Lowry. Kiev vows revenge for 12-hour bombing. Kiev has experienced one of its worst bombardments since the start of Vladimir Putin's full-scale invasion of Ukraine, with at least four people killed in what President Volodymyr Zelensky described as a vile and cowardly attack. Russia launched nearly 600 drones and more than 40 cruise missiles in a bombardment that lasted more than 12 hours over Saturday night and into yesterday morning. The main targets were the Ukrainian capital and the regions of Zaporizhzhia and Khmelnytsky and Sumy and Mykolaiv, Chernihiv and Odessa. I really tried. Sorry to Ukrainians about that. Ukraine's president pointed out that the onslaught had taken place at the close of UN General Assembly week in New York, during which Donald Trump had expressed support for Kiev. Zelensky called on allies to stop all Russian oil imports and promised his country would strike back. I just want to wheel it up, Selector, to where he said... one of its worst bombardments since the start of Vladimir Putin's full-scale invasion of Ukraine, with at least four people killed. Four people killed. No lives, you know, should be lost. Fine. But four people killed, and that makes the front page of The Guardian. How many people have been killed in the Congo? How many people have been killed in Palestine? And still we're dancing around calling the thing what it is. We don't want to say that the duck that is quacking like a duck is in fact a duck. I just find that very interesting and sad. Starmer fails to rule out VAT increase in budget. This is the Times. He better start thinking about things. Immigrants face good citizen tests to stay in the UK. But you're saying that immigrants should do these good citizen tests. Can the average Brit, these ones that are jumping out onto the road and shouting with their missing teeth that they, you know, want these people gone, this, that and the other. If they sat the test, would they pass? Because that's what I want to see. If you ask me to organise it and you say you want people to sit these immigration tests, okay, they sit it, but their pass rate has to be the pass rate of the average Brit. So if out of 100 questions, the average Brit gets 2 right, then that means that that's the pass rate, that the person that is seeking to stay in this country only has to get 2 right. Because I swear down, if we're not leveling it out like that, you're only asking for your country to go into decline severely. So bear that in mind. So shared those bits. Let me now look at your front and what you've sent me and keep it very brief. And so I can wrap this up because I'm sure you don't want to hear me yapping all day. So let me see here. What have we got? I think that should be his campaign song, actually. Andy Burnham. Look what a Burnham can do. Focus. But again, justice for Zeina Iman. Okay, here we go. My first one of the two that I chose today says here, my front page fuckery, thanks. Morning, Kelechi. I hope all is well in your world. Firstly, I just want to say how much I'm enjoying your podcast, Front Page Fuckery. It's wonderful and much needed. I also finished reading Awakened, and what a read it was. Hugely enjoyable. I loved every page and can't wait for more from Pels. Thank you. I've got to write Awakened Part 2 and I haven't started yet. And oh, yeah, life is on my ass. Please can I ask you to speak on the documentary that was aired on ITV this week, COVID Contracts, Follow the Money. It was a truly insightful documentary that exposed the depths of the criminality and corruption of the government's VIP lanes for essential PPE during the pandemic. Billions of pounds spent and wasted, and the taxpayer is currently paying the price for it. The documentary was covered, amongst others, by the Good Law Project. I'd like you to speak on it because since it aired, there has been radio silence on the subject and everyone should be outraged. They should be more outraged than the post office scandal. We should be out protesting in the streets about it. In fact, MSM are so silent about it. The following morning, as in MSM is mainstream media, for those who don't know, are so silent about it. The following morning, I woke to Susanna Reid on GMB pontificating about how deported asylum seekers are being given £2,000 on a card to send them on their way. Are they serious? I couldn't give a single shit about £2,000 on a card given to a person seeking asylum after fleeing war and persecution. In fact, give that person a home, a job, give them everything they need to live well. On the other hand, I do care about billions and billions of pounds being laundered, squandered, and stolen from our country to the point of impoverishing our entire nation, just so that a few privileged posh boys can serve their own self-interest while enriching their mates at the expense of everybody else. I do care about that, and so should everyone else. Thank you for your attention and big up yourself. You are amazing. Thank you so much for that. I don't even think I need to add to it because you said all of the things that needed to be said, right? I keep saying that Britain is a massive money laundering scheme, specifically London. It's they are robbing us through our nostrils. Everybody's here about, oh, I'm working in corporate and I'm working so hard. Oh, I believe you, baby. But we are all still getting stolen from on a mad one. We are being robbed. And here we are arguing about lamb being put in a plastic box and trying to justify it because, oh, people are stealing. Meanwhile, we have been robbed. We've been robbed by the elite. We've been robbed by the corporations. We've been robbed by the government. And you want to come and cry over lamb? You're locking it up in a box. Crazy. Next one. Let's go. I don't know what's happening with my phone. Here we go. Hi, Kelechi, longtime listener and supporter here. Thanks for all you do and for continuing to inspire and motivate us as you do. And congratulations on the new podcast. Thank you. These front pages have long been misleading the public and doing immeasurable damage to our society. Thank you for working to remedy this on top of everything else you create. Just wonderful. I'm not sure if you'll feature this as it's not strictly a front page, nor are these articles particularly recent, though I'm sure the fuckery is ongoing. But I've been researching the circumstances of some political prisoners currently serving time or on remand for being part of activist groups such as Palestine Action and Just Stop Oil, as I'm writing to as many of them as possible right now in solidarity with their situations. In doing this, I read that one such activist, Sean Middleborough, who I believe is currently in jail on another charge, was actually caught in a sting operation by journalist Max Parry, working undercover for the Daily Express and posing as an activist himself. And then they provide links to the different stories. There is a good article about, oh, don't care about them. The other case where the Sun infiltrated a meeting of Just Stop Oil in order to help with their arrests is also part of this. A follow-up story on this suggests that we, the public, feel fury as the Just Stop Oil activists have their sentences reduced. And that's obviously it's the Sun that wrote that we're so angry about Just Stop Oil having their sentences reduced. It made me think about the spy cop scandal and the treacherous lengths law enforcement and legacy media will go to protect their own financial and political interests and to manipulate the general population to our collective demise. Hence, I am submitting it as a fine example of some front page fuckery. Thank you. And as always, best wishes. Thank you so much. Thank you for that. Journalists are doing the wildest things, like go and cover something of substance, right? But here they are infiltrating groups. And for those who don't know enough about the spy cops, we found that undercover police officers were infiltrating activist groups, primarily for these, in this specific case, environmentalist groups, marrying the people, having children with the people, all under a guise the whole time. And it's going through the courts, and obviously the courts always move to protect police officers, right? And we're being told that it's a case of national security. They were doing what they needed to do. I feel like this is why I'm so like wary and cautious of making new friends, and I would say at this stage in my career even dating, because no weapon formed against me shall prosper. You know, there's a running joke amongst me and my friends that I think everyone's a cop. Like, I'm like, why were you sent to me? What do you want? It's a, if I didn't birth Lev, I would probably accuse him of being a cop too. You know, like, nobody is without suspicion as far as I'm concerned. I am suspecting everybody. Everybody is a cop until proven otherwise, because, you know, they're a fed unless, you know, I'm led elsewhere. But it is worrying. It is worrying that the people who are concerned about what's happening to our environment, what's happening to our world, what's happening to this planet, are the ones who are vilified by mainstream media, by legacy media. And we then, as the public that can only read so many words at a time, then go, yeah, they're the bad guys. They're making things inconvenient for us. Get them out. At the end of the day, when you get out the migrants, when you get out the people, the activists who are actually calling for for the changes that will better your life, once you've gotten rid of everybody, all you'll have is yourselves. And what a sad, sad day that will be. So I guess I'll leave it there. My birthday is on Sunday. So that's Sunday, 5th of October. So for those who want to do anything cute for me, I would suggest donating to the children's home that I built in Lagos, Nigeria, because then I can keep it going, thriving, and looking after the children that currently live there. You can also, if you choose to, if you haven't done already, donate to a cause that's helping out in Palestine or in Congo or in Sudan. Should you feel to that, that would be wonderful. And if you're doing it on my behalf, I would greatly appreciate that as well. You can join Kaleidoscope, which is my members area, but only come there if you have good vibes. Otherwise, stay the hell away. You can also purchase one of my books through an official seller or through bookshop.org, because that will hopefully go towards my royalties one day and people buying the book and it's out there in the world. That's all wonderful to me. Or you can come and watch the short film that I directed. It's written and produced by Candy Roman, and it's on Sunday, 12th of October at Genesis Cinema in Hackney. So you can come through and celebrate with us there. Buy your tickets online to watch the short film that we made. And yeah, I guess that's it. So happy birthday to me in advance. And I guess that's front page fuckery. We've covered it all. I've been Kelechi Okafor. And here we are, turning bad news into good conversation. Thank you for joining me. And I guess I'll catch you on the other side of the news. Bless.
Oh, have you heard the news? It's probably been twisted to keep the general population conflicted. Better lick your finger and turn the page. Dissect the lines that paid you to rage. Get out of your Monday drudgery. Turn up the volume on front page fuckery.